For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, with a shout-out to Orlando, Florida, which is 45th on our countdown of cities with most CDN video views. And speaking of videos, I'm also here with an invitation to all of you to join us for a free webinar with Roger Pilkey Jr. on 30 years of the climate debate and his experiences with the climate gatekeepers. It's free, but you have to register, so please click here. I've also got a warm welcome to our 11,000 new subscribers on YouTube and a We Told You So in response to the Washington Post suddenly noticing that, quote, amid explosive demand, America is running out of power. AI and the boom in clean tech manufacturing are pushing America's power grid to the brink. Utilities can't keep up, end quote. Now, we're not so sure there's a boom in clean tech manufacturing so much as a bubble in government-financed unicorn power. But otherwise, yes, it's an all-hands-on-deck climate crisis, a real crisis this time, but one caused by climate policy, not climate change. Naturally, the Post confuses an abstraction with reality, and vice versa, whining that, quote, it also threatens to stifle the transition to cleaner energy, end quote, whereas the whole problem is that there is no transition to cleaner energy, and the contrary pretense threatens to stifle their once reliable electricity supply. Remind us again what the Post slogan was about something dying in darkness? Was it the economy? Maybe. The piece declares in stunned dismay that in the richest nation the world has ever seen, quote, in Georgia, demand for industrial power is surging to record highs, with the projection of new electricity use for the next decade now 17 times what it was only recently. Arizona Public Service, the largest utility in that state, is also struggling to keep up, projecting it will be out of transmission capacity before the end of the decade absent major upgrades. Northern Virginia needs the equivalent of several large nuclear power plants to serve all the new data centers planned and under construction. Texas, where electricity shortages are already routine on hot summer days, faces the same dilemma. Yes, that's pretty much across the nation, from Georgia in the southeast to Arizona in the southwest, and also oil-rich Texas and coal-rich Virginia. And the piece then claims, quote, the situation is sparking battles across the nation over who will pay for new power supplies, with regulators worrying that residential ratepayers could be stuck with the bill for costly upgrades, end quote. But the real problem is who's going to pay because there aren't new power supplies. Ratepayers will be stuck without electricity, which is bad for anybody who wants their stove, their car, their fridge, or their light switch to work. In the newsletter, we also note that some people were confused by the claim in an earlier readout video that Arctic ice was higher in early January 2024 than it had been for decades. And there were also some people who said, yeah, okay, maybe it was, but by April it was lower than 2012, which NASA's National Snow and Ice Data Center polemically highlights by default as the record minimum. But that record, and it's only a record since 1979, concerned the September minimum. In April and May of 2012, levels of Arctic ice were actually above the recent average, as they were in 2024. In fact, through April of this year, Arctic ice was often at a 10-year high, despite claims of 2023 being the hottest year ever and causing relentless ice melting. We looked again, and in late May, it's still about third in the last decade. So again, where's this relentless melting? And we also started getting pestered by people who said, oh, sea ice extent, who cares about that stuff? It's total volume that matters. Which is a bit odd, since they didn't say anything about that while sea ice extent appeared to be shrinking, so it feels like a bit of a bait and switch. But never mind. We'll keep an eye on it, and an open mind, and maybe they should too. In the newsletter, we also note the Globe and Mail blaring, quote, deadly heat in West Africa warns of climate change-driven scorchers to come, says report, end quote. So it's another news story about something that's going to happen, not something that did happen, and apparently what's going to happen is that Africa will be hot, which is a pretty safe bet given that it's been hot all along. And we also note Canary Media hyping a solar hydrogen sailboat that, quote, runs on 100% renewables. Can it help clean up bigger ships, end quote? No, probably not. Steam did replace sail for a reason. But still, they're welcome to try, and if it turns out that it does work, more power to them. Meanwhile, chocolate gets it again, courtesy of The Atlantic, and of course, quote, extreme weather heightened by climate change, end quote. Potatoes are also going, according to Roger Hallam, who is the co-founder of Extinction Rebellion and Just Stop Oil, in a cheery, quote, update on how you are going to starve, end quote. Now, technically, world potato production is high and rising. But who needs facts when we have climate change? Still, we'll always have snakes. The April 15th National Post declared that researchers think, quote, python farming could offer a solution to rising food insecurity around the globe, exacerbated by climate change, end quote. Although, to be all technical again, there is not rising food insecurity around the globe. There are record harvests, record population size, and record human well-being. Still, speaking of the news of the future, we're told that, quote, Canada's 2024 wildfire season expected to be even worse than last year's, end quote, and of course, you know what's to blame. Now, on the plus side, at least it's a testable proposition. That is that the wildfire season will be worse, not really that it's due to climate change. But if it doesn't happen, do you think the news outlets will even do a follow-up? And in the newsletter, we also swat away some of those pesky commenters on climate who insist that the physics is simple. CO2, they say, absorbs heat, so if there's more of it, the atmosphere warms. Slam dunk. Unfortunately, as our video on the simple physics slogan explains, there are actually many highly speculative hypothetical links in what they take to be a short, solid chain of fact. But now, Jim Steele has done a post on X, reporting on some findings that actually are fairly simple physics, based on fairly straightforward evidence, and, if vindicated, pose a big problem for the whole alarmist theory. Now, climate orthodoxy says that CO2 traps outgoing long-wave radiation, or OLR, also known as infrared heat, though more exactly it scatters it. And supposedly, because it scatters it in all directions, less of it heads straight back out into space than would if there was less CO2, and the resulting energy imbalance warms the planet. But here's the problem. Satellite measurements show that since 1985, the amount of OLR leaving the Earth has increased by about 2 watts per square meter instead of going down. So, whatever the complex dynamics of climate, rising CO2 has not resulted in less heat leaving the planet. Kaboom! Now, as Steele says, satellites also show decreasing cloud cover. So, real science has competing theories to test against the evidence, including possibly that there's something wrong with the measurement. That's the way science works. Hypothesis, evidence, revision, hypothesis, evidence, revision. So, let's see how it goes. Or whether it goes, climate science being somewhat different than the normal kind. Ah, and with the energy transition failing in transit, there's a lot of hype these days about carbon removal, where we suck a trace gas out of the air and stuff it into the dirt, and it doesn't leak back out. Unfortunately, it turns out that the settled science and economics here are again a hoorah's nest of uncertainty and error. Heatmap says, quote, money seems to be pouring into the field of carbon removal from every direction, end quote, though actually it's pouring in from the government. And the reason it's pouring in is that, quote, it will be impossible to achieve net zero emissions by 2050, either at the national or global level, without removing carbon from the atmosphere. But how much carbon removal will we need, and how do we make sure we're ready to deploy it, end quote? Those are good questions. And here their concern is bracingly pseudo-practical. They fret that, quote, carbon removal is a moving target, end quote, because supposedly, quote, we know how much we're removing today, roughly 5 million metric tons, mostly from nature-based solutions like planting trees, end quote, and then some group estimates that it could be scaled up to 50 million metric tons by 2035. Quote, but figuring out how much we need depends entirely on how successful we are at decarbonizing everything else. Even if we know we need to electrify all our cars, for example, no one can say whether that will happen by 2050, or at least not with any meaningful degree of certainty, end quote. Oddly enough, virtually every word of that is wrong except the bit about meaningful degree of certainty lacking. We have no idea how to electrify all our cars, or what it would take to generate the needed power if we did, or how many more buildings and cars there will be in 2050, or of what sort, any more than we knew back in 1998 where things would stand or roll today. And we don't know how much we're removing today. We don't know what would be happening if we were not planting trees. We don't know how many more trees we're planting because we became scared of plant food in the air than we would have otherwise. We don't know what those trees are doing, or even who's planting them. But apart from that, it's as simple as the physics of climate change. So, when you need a quick, simple serving of climate panic, haul Antarctica out of the icebox, defrost it, and serve it with a side of steaming hype. So, quote, new research from Antarctica affirms the threat of the doomsday glacier, but funding to keep studying it is running out, end quote. World ends, send money. And The Economist just whinged, quote, Antarctica, Earth's largest refrigerator, is defrosting, end quote, then insists that those clods over at the IPCC were all wrong about it being stable. Instead, quote, glaciologists are warning of a regime change, implying that the ice may be entering a new state where it responds differently to events, end quote. Yeah, unless it's not. And in our latest Getting Worse installment, we know that according to that renowned expert Greta Thunberg, because of climate change, quote, people are suffering, people are dying, entire ecosystems are collapsing, end quote. And look, history has seen people die in famines, if not entire ecosystem collapse. There was the Irish potato famine of 1845 to 1852, the Finnish famine of 1866 to 68, which killed an estimated 15% of their population. There was the Persian famine of 1917 to 1919 that killed 2 million people in what today is Iran. And of course, there was the Great Chinese famine of 1959 to 1961, through which Mao Zedong relieved himself of some 20 million unwanted fellow citizens. Or, well, there are far too many to list, but you can certainly find them at Wikipedia or other such sources. And if you do, you can't help noticing, though Thunberg managed not to notice it, that they're actually becoming so rare that outside a handful of war-torn socialist dictatorships, famines basically don't happen anymore. It almost seems as though, despite global warming and rising atmospheric CO2, or because of them, there's a lot more food in the world. Because there is. According to data from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the value of agriculture output per worker worldwide in inflation-adjusted 2015 American dollars grew like this. Essentially, as the climate crisis hit, every worker in the agricultural industry around the world began producing, on average, twice as much food as they did 30 years ago. If this keeps up, we'll be having an obesity epidemic, not a famine. Oh, wait, in many places we already are. In the newsletter, we also continue our fact check of Martin Durkin's popular Climate the Movie with a look at the claim that measured warming has been exaggerated by the effects of urbanization. In the film, University of Guelph economist Ross McKittrick is quoted saying, quote, some places warm a lot and some places don't warm much. And it turns out that it's highly correlated with the spatial pattern of economic activity, end quote. He then showed this phenomenon in a set of studies published between 2004 and 2013, which eventually led even the IPCC to conclude that there was, quote, significant evidence for such contamination of the record, end quote. But of course, they kept on using the data anyway. Durkin also interviewed Dr. Willie Soon, whose co-authored 2023 paper compared the official warming rates with warming measured using only rural records. And Soon claimed that, quote, we combine all the best rural stations, and if you use only rural, you get a very different kind of picture. Basically, we have a warming from the 1900s or so to the 1930s and 40s, and then it cooled in a substantial way to the 70s, 76 or so. Instead of a long-term systematic warming trend, it has a variability, every 50 to 60 years or so, kind of a variation, end quote. On our fact check on all of this, it's true. Then we wrap up with a related item from the CO2science.org archive on the impact of rapid urbanization between 1961 and 2004 on China's temperature records, and sure enough, urbanization is messing up the data. For the Climate Discussion Nexus, I'm John Robson, and I don't believe in an energy transition that's all transition and no energy. That's right.